Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Wednesday, February 27th, 2013. And in a sequestration smackdown, Sean Hannity gets what he gives from Congressman Keith Ellison.
Well, you know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout, throw my hands up and shout, throw my head back and shout, come on now, don't forget to say you will.
I want to thank my Facebook friend, Beekeeper Joy, as I don't spend much time watching Sean Hannity on the Fox News channel. But Keith Ellison is a progressive Democrat, the only Muslim in Congress. He represents a part of Minneapolis. I've met him, talked with him many times, have real respect for him, a true progressive. And here, he does some extra duty for President Obama on the whole case made by Fox News and Republicans that the sequester is all his fault. Now, as I've pointed out here, the paternity is challenged, and there's a lot of Three Stooges finger-pointing going on. But at least in terms of who made the original proposal to include this in the budget bill of the summer of 2011, it came from Jack Lew at the White House. But as you're about to hear, Ellison puts it in context and says, well, the president only agreed to that because his back was to the wall. Our bond ratings and other ratings were going down because of the brinksmanship of Republicans over a phony crisis about the debt ceiling. Now, this is a fairly lengthy clip, but listen as Keith Ellison, from the outset and right to the very end, goes toe-to-toe with Sean Hannity. And it's kind of interesting because Ellison is being picked up live from the Capitol, and there's a neat little echo behind a lot of his comments. And listen carefully, because at one point, Hannity says, well, I'll let you rant. And then he says, okay, now I want to ask you a question. And Keith says, well, we'll let you get a word in. And then he says, no, I changed my mind. I'm going to keep talking. And then at another point, you'll hear Sean Hannity challenge what appears to be a false assertion from Mr. Ellison that Hannity's a Republican. He claims to be a registered conservative. And maybe in New York State, there is a conservative party you can register with. I'm not aware of that. At any rate, he then channels Mitt Romney to bet Keith Ellison first $1,000 and then $10,000 that he's not a registered Republican. This is priceless. Give a listen.
When the Obama sequester takes effect on Friday, it's because the president was more concerned with fear-mongering than finding a solution to the problem that he himself created. Joining me now with some insight, Democratic Congressman Keith Ellison of Minnesota. Congressman, welcome back, sir.
You bet.
I guess that's what we could describe as staying on message, something the Democratic Party, I would argue, is very good at. Let me ask
you're pretty good at it, too.
Thank you.
Know, quite frankly, you are the worst excuse for a journalist I've ever seen. This
I am
absurd,
the what?
The
I
worst.
Can't hear you.
You heard me.
I didn't know. Say it again. I didn't hear you.
I heard you. I mean, what you just displayed was not journalism. It was yellow journalism. It wasn't anything close to trying to tell the American people what's really going on. And, I mean, it's just shocking to
yellow
me.
Journalism? To play Obama
yes.
in his own words is yellow journalism? No.
Well, with the background music and with your lead up before you let the president talk, let me tell you, I was here. Everything the president said is absolutely true.
Yeah.
And for you to try to make the American people think that it isn't is deceptive on your part.
Well,
and
yeah.
It's a breach of everything. Every journalistic ethic I have ever heard of was just violated by you. And the
really?
President was truthful. The president was honest. What the president said was dead on accurate. And for you to say the president is to blame here is ridiculous. I was there August 2011 when the Republicans, your party, which you shamelessly
I'm not a Republican.
Represent,
Let me correct
you, are
the record.
You are nothing but a Republican.
Yes, you are. Sir.
Well, let me just say,
I am not a registered Republican.
You are a shill for the Republican Party.
I am a registered conservative,
sir. You alibi
sir.
Them constantly. You alibi them 100% of the time.
Keep going.
You don't
keep
do anything
ranting.
Else. Okay. Well, good. Let me just say this:
keep
what the
ranting.
President said is that what the president said is absolutely true. The president, the people watching your show should ignore all of the commentary that you put in and all of the hype music that you put on. and should pay attention to what the president actually said, because what the president said was true. The president, you, by the way, are inaccurate when you say that the president is to blame here. He's not. It was the Republicans in August 2011 said that they were going to cause the American economy to default on debts we already acquired unless they got deep and substantial cuts. And we ended up with a downgrade because of what the Republicans did. And after that, we set up this thing called the super committee. When all the Republican members on that super committee had already pledged to Grover Norquist they would not raise revenue, only do cuts. And then after it failed, as it always was going to, we ended up with sequester.
Right, let me ask you a question. I've given you plenty of time to rant, Congressman. Now we'll let you get a word in. Go ahead. Oh, you're so nice to give me a word on my own program.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
As a matter of fact, you said the president was true. Congressman, calm. I will give you your chance. I gave you 3 minutes to rant. Calm down. I gave you three minutes. Relax. I've got a question for you. You were invited on the program to answer a question.
Right.
I want to give you a couple questions. Congressman, let me ask you a question.
What I think is right.
Why are you so angry? You're so angry. Let me ask
Why
you a question.
So angry?
I'm not angry. I'm
so
laughing
angry?
At you because I think this
Why
is actually
so, I'm
comical.
I'm laughing at you.
All right. Here's my question for you.
It's not the first time.
Listen, I invited you on. I gave you 3 minutes to rant. Now let me ask you a question. We'll have a discussion. In the spirit of bipartisanship, let's find a dialogue. I want to ask you this.
I thought you weren't a Republican.
Max, I'm a registered conservative.
Lie?
I am,
yeah,
sir.
Right.
You want to make $1,000 bet that I'm a registered conservative? You want to make a $10,000 bet?
I don't bet.
I'm just telling you, I'm a registered conservative. I wrote a book called Conservative Victory. I didn't write Republican Victory.
Do you have a question for me, sir?
Yes, I do. All right. Now, first of all, it was Max Baucus and it was Bob Woodward that said that the president requested the sequester, point one. Point number two, my question to you is very simple. Barack Obama, because you said that what he said is
true. The Budget Control Act was forced down the American public by the Republican Party.
Congressman.
Sequester is a provision of the Budget Control
Congressman,
Act.
Congressman, relax.
The Republicans are responsible for the Budget Control Act, which contains sequester. I know,
you're a broken record. Now let me get you my question.
You're a broken record.
Okay, thank you. Here's my question. So Barack Obama said in 2008 when he was running for office that George Bush was irresponsible and unpatriotic for when he became president, we had $10 trillion in debt. We now have $16 trillion in debt, Congressman.
I'm here to speak for myself.
$16 trillion in debt.
I want to ask you, is it something about that?
Here's my question.
I got an answer for you. You want to do something about the $16 trillion? Let's do something. Let's close loopholes on large corporations.
Yeah.
Let's say that yachts and jets should not be something you can write off. Let's say that ExxonMobil and Chevron should not get a tax rebate and a subsidy. Let's start there. Let's say that people who get to pay less on carriages should be able to. Here's a simple question. Is it immoral to put 16 and a half? I'm immoral?
What did I do that's immoral? I didn't do anything that's immoral.
You say things that aren't true.
Give me one example, sir.
Well, to try to say that it is the president's fault and he is to blame is wrong, and it's not his fault that we have 16 trillion in debt.
He didn't add $6 trillion to the debt since he's been president.
No, we did add six trillion to debt since he's been president. What about the other 10?
All right,
let's talk about the other 10.
Congressman, you are a total waste of time. I'm moving on because our audience deserves better. Thank you for being with us. I tried to give you a fair shot. And coming up,
no, you didn't.
Did ABC.
Well, kudos to Keith Ellison for going into the lion's den and biting back. We need to see more Democrats and progressives with spine who will do that. Turning to the fixing the debt problem itself, I'm going to post a link to a very well-written blog post written by somebody who uses the name Gaius Publius. And it came originally from America Blog. And it takes a look at the Democrats who are selling us down the river by participating in this unnecessary debt reduction scheme, which, of course, is ultimately aimed at our Social Security and Medicare benefits. And this article names names, including Ed Rendell, the former governor of Pennsylvania, an alleged Democrat, who is knee-deep in corporate boards, and as we pointed out in our in-depth interview with Steve Horn about fracking the other day, he's the one who intervened and got the Obama EPA to stop its legitimate investigation into groundwater contamination near Dallas from a fracking site owned by Range Industries. This article also identifies Phil Bredesen, former Democratic governor of Tennessee, Vic Fazio, a little known but very powerful Democrat who served 20 years in the House from Sacramento, and now lobbies for AT&T, Corrections Corporation of America, Archer Daniels Midland, Shell Oil, and Dow Chemical, plus the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So he's a guy who sells out and does very well in the process. Sam Nunn, former senator from Georgia, Steve Ratner, who was the Obama point man in the Detroit bailout, Antonio Villaraigosa, the current mayor of Los Angeles, who is a member of the Fix the Debt group. And so this is very important so that you understand that there is a concerted effort to sell out our best interests. And some of the people who claim to represent us are cashing in or building their own influence in the process. Here in California, for the first time ever, a majority of voters polled in the esteemed field poll, 54%, are ready to legalize marijuana and treat it like alcohol. Taxes and restrictions would be similar. So this would mirror the Colorado development. And it's the first time, if you go back to 1969, only 13% of those polled favored legalization. Now it's up to 54%. And this is on the heels of just 3 years ago in 2010. We had a marijuana legalization ballot measure. The poll showed 50% were in favor, but ultimately 54% of voters were feared into voting against it. So this is real progress. I hope that Obama is listening, and at minimum, the Justice Department should back off from its highly political crackdown on medical marijuana clinics that was ramped up in time for last year's reelection of Obama. And one of my favorite California state senators, Mark Leno, the Democratic openly gay man from San Francisco, has introduced new legislation to reform drug sentencing laws for simple possession. And it is about time. This would help clear our prisons, which are loaded with drug offenders, most of whom are nonviolent, and would reflect the changes in public opinion. There's also a very important study released regarding incarceration across the country. And finally, the worst byproduct of the war on some drugs that was launched under Richard Nixon is starting to recede. It's not gone, but the disproportionate sentencing of African Americans to prison is finally starting to decline. Looking at numbers from 2000 to 2009, the rate of incarceration for black women has dropped significantly. It used to be 6 times the rate of white women. Now it's only 2.8. For black men, the rate was 9.8% compared to whites, and now it has shrunk to 6.4 times the rate for white men. Now, that's still discrimination. It's still a very serious racist problem in our criminal justice system, but it's progress. And I like to remind people that the disparities in the sentencing from crack cocaine resulted from a crusade by a guy named Joe Biden, who was a member of the U.S. Senate back in the 1980s. Bradley Manning went to a hearing at Fort Meade, Maryland today, preliminary to his court-martial, which is expected now to begin on June 3rd. His attorneys asked the judge to dismiss all charges, partly because they didn't give Bradley Manning a speedy trial. And somehow, the military judge, Colonel Denise Lind, says, well, it only took 90 days to come to trial, and they have up to 120 under court-martial rules. Well, Bradley Manning has been incarcerated for 1,000 days. He hit that milestone last Saturday. So I don't know when she started the clock running, but I'm not surprised that she would make a ruling such as this. We understand that Bradley Manning himself will take the stand on Thursday at Fort Meade, and his lawyers are expect to lead him through an explanation of why he grabbed the documents and fed them to WikiLeaks. At the same time, this report comes from the Telegraph newspaper in London. Haven't seen anything about it in the U.S. media. But prosecutors in the Manning court-martial are asking the judge if they can bring in a member of SEAL Team 6. Now, keep in mind that it is secret which actual members of SEAL Team 6 reportedly went on the raid to Abbottabad and reportedly killed Osama bin Laden. The government wants to put a Navy SEAL on the witness stand to testify that secret files from WikiLeaks were discovered in Osama bin Laden's compound. Now, this is a lowball move in a number of ways. First of all, as I've pointed out repeatedly, the whole raid on Abbottabad is a trust-me situation. We know there was a raid because they crashed a helicopter, and there was a local resident who tweeted about it. But we don't know that they actually killed bin Laden there. There are substantive arguments that he was killed long before that. And nobody has applied skeptical reasoning, or at least nobody in the media, to the government-fed reports about the raid on Abbottabad, which John Brennan repeatedly botched when he tried to get the limelight for it right after the raid reportedly occurred. So the government wants to bring in what they call a military operator, quote, the operator who actually collected the evidence in Abbottabad and handed it to an FBI agent in Afghanistan. And so what if Osama bin Laden had copies of some of the information released via WikiLeaks and allegedly by Bradley Manning? There is no evidence to date that this compromised American security or the life or liberty of any agent, covert or otherwise. And so this is an effort to use the power of the government to control secret information in an effort to further smear Bradley Manning. At the Supreme Court today, oral arguments in a case brought under the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And white racism was on full display. If you want some context and analysis on this issue, go to bradblog.com. Brad Friedman has an excellent post about it. But Antonin Scalia said that the voting rights procedures intended to protect the rights of minorities, mostly African Americans, mostly in the South, is a perpetuation of racial entitlement. The Chief Justice, John Roberts, asked a skeptical question about whether people in the South are more racist than those in the North. Justice Anthony Kennedy, the likely swing vote, is swinging to the right on this one. He said, how much longer does Alabama have to live, quote, under the trusteeship of the United States government? Clarence Thomas, the only African-American on the court, of course, typically asked no questions, uttered not a word. And the lawyer from Alabama said the problem to which the Voting Rights Act was addressed is solved. Yes, we have no racism left in this country. Just look at the numbers on incarceration rates for black people. And to be fair, when Congress extended for 25 years the Voting Rights Act in 2006, they had exhaustive hearings and collected a lot of evidence to show that there is still discrimination against African Americans in the electoral process and that these safeguards are necessary. In Chicago, former state Representative Robin Kelly won the special election in the primary to succeed Jesse Jackson Jr. in Congress. And this is an interesting litmus test because her candidacy was supported by Mike Bloomberg, the billionaire mayor of New York, and his political fund. And Bloomberg hammered the opponent, Debbie Halverson, because she had previously served in Congress and got a 100% or whatever it is, the maximum rating from the NRA. And so Bloomberg spent $2 million in this one district on the south side of Chicago to drive that point home. And Kelly beat Halverson by twice as many votes, 52-25%. And so it could be that gun rights will be a major issue. These special elections are often anomalies, and it's hard to say that they show any trends, but it is worth noting. Another thing worth noting is I've watched Rachel Maddow's coverage of this interesting special election and the role of gun regulation proponents and the gun lobby in this race. And never once has she mentioned the reason why Jesse Jackson Jr. has vacated his seat and that he's on his way to federal prison. And it's that kind of slanted coverage that continues to bug me about MSNBC, or as I sometimes call it, MSDNC. Come on, Rachel. Is it because he's African-American, because he's Democrat? There's no reason to protect a corrupt guy who has admitted to his long-term raiding of campaign funds like Jesse Jackson Jr. There's simply no reason. Also in our Department of Corrections here today, Michelle Obama appeared on Good Morning America, and she misspoke. She said something that isn't true. She's talking about the Chicago murder of the 15-year-old girl named Hadiyah Pendleton. And she made a mistake, Michelle Obama did, and I'm not blaming her bangs. But she said in the interview that this young lady was caught in the line of fire because some kids had some automatic weapons they didn't need. Well, there is no suggestion or evidence that an automatic weapon was used in the murder of Hadiyah Pendleton. And so, you know, you make mistakes, you own up to them. Instead, ABC News has edited that interview for posting on its website, claiming that it only edited it to bring it in under time. Now, I happen to know how these things work. And if they had edited for the broadcast to make sure it fit in between all those damn commercials, they'd have a reasonable excuse. But to edit something to be posted on the web where we have unlimited space and time? That's bullshit, friends. Just plain bullshit. One more embarrassing correction coming out of the Pentagon, where Leon Panetta can now actually retire. Chuck Hagel was confirmed by the Senate yesterday. But last week, he made a series of statements saying that things were getting better in Afghanistan, and in particular, that in 2012, attacks by the Taliban dropped off. They said there was a 7% decline in attacks. Turns out it's not true. And we get this spin and dissembling from spokesman George Little at the Pentagon. This particular set of metrics doesn't tell the full story of progress against the Taliban, of course, but it's unhelpful to have inaccurate information in our systems. Right. In Kazakhstan, 2 days of talks between the 5+1 six world powers and Iran ended on Wednesday, and there does seem to be a little progress, although the Western representatives tend to play that down. We reported yesterday that Obama is planning to tell Bibi Netanyahu when he visits Israel in the next week or two that the window for an attack on Iran opens in June. At any rate, there are specific agreements for further meetings, technical meetings in March, and a meeting of the diplomats in April. And they have offered some incentives to Iran. They dropped their demand that Iran shut down its enrichment plant at Fordo, instead insisting that Iran suspend enrichment work there and agree to unspecified conditions to make it hard to quickly resume enrichment. And the six also agreed to that Iran could produce and keep a small amount of 20% enriched uranium for use in a medical isotope situation. So the talks will resume March 18th and 19th in Istanbul on the technical side, and the full negotiations resume again in early April, again in Kazakhstan. Shell Oil has announced it will suspend drilling in the Arctic Ocean throughout the year 2013. Well, it's about time they came to their senses. They had problems with both of the drilling platforms that they attempted to install in the Chukchi Sea. That's hard to say, Chukchi Sea, which is off the northwest coast of Alaska. The president, Marvin Odom of Shell, said that we're going to pause in 2013 to ensure the readiness of all our equipment and people following the drilling season in 2012. Oh, boy. It's what he forgot to mention. You know, about that drilling platform that went adrift, ran aground. Didn't instill a lot of confidence in their prowess. And finally today, as the Supreme Court prepares to hear oral arguments in the challenge to Proposition 8, which banned what was legal, marriage equality here in California, was passed by the voters, and at the time it was supported by Meg Whitman, the billionaire who was trying to buy the governor's office. She spent $125 million of her own money and about $40 million of other people's money and lost to Jerry Brown by at least 8 points. And at the time, she was courting conservatives and talking about cracking down on immigration, which a governor can't do. She also said that she supported Proposition 8. Yesterday, it was revealed that she has signed an amicus brief with the Supreme Court saying that she supports the overturning of Proposition 8. Well, Meg, if you're going to be two-faced, I'll just tell you, I like this face better than the one that ran for governor. Thanks for listening to my news and comment. You can share this podcast far and wide because we distribute it free. And I always appreciate your comments. Send them to humblehost@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.